Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome inside the program. It's 12:02 Calgary Flames game day, game one against the Dallas Stars tonight. Well, I guess this afternoon, if you want to call it that. 3:30 is puck drop. Of course, we're all over it. And welcome inside Hockey Central. I am Will Nault back on the afternoon program alongside Peter Klein today. Logan Gordon, the man you just heard on Trending Now, is back at the controls in downtown Calgary. Klein, what's up, pal?
Not much, man. Just getting ready for some little afternoon weekday hockey. I've been digging the afternoon game so far, and happy we got it on the radio today with the Flames and the Stars.
Yeah, it's not as hectic as the qualifying rounds were in terms of hockey beginning at 10 a.m. I believe last week when you're hitting the airwaves, you were kind of at the end of the first game of the day usually. But now we're just down to a modest four games. It begins at the top of the hour with Columbus and Tampa in the Eastern Conference. And then, of course, the Flames and the Stars, the second game of the day at 3:30. 6 o'clock tonight, it's the Boston Bruins and Carolina Hurricanes in the second half of the East doubleheader out in Toronto, and the nightcap out West, Vegas and Chicago. Quick aside there, Klein. The Golden Knights going with Robin Lehner tonight in game one.
Yeah, with former Chicago Blackhawk great Robin Lehner getting the call against the team that traded him away as they were rebuilding. And apparently the rebuild was pretty quick as they're into the Stanley Cup playoffs. But an interesting move with Marc-Andre Fleury not really having the year a lot of people would have wanted. I'm a little surprised they went this way. I think it makes sense, but I still didn't think they would do it game one.
Yeah, it makes sense against a former team. And again, as you mentioned, I don't know if anyone necessarily is surprised by it, but the future investment in a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, the success he's had since getting there from Pittsburgh, a bit of a surprise, and we'll see how that plays out as the playoffs continue this week. Fleury, of course, signed for 2 more years, and Robin Lehner, a UFA, whenever this offseason does hit. Usually you'd finish that sentence with this summer, but the Stanley Cup playoffs are taking up this summer. We got lots to do on this hour. It is a Flames game day, which means we kick things off in just a second with Peter Labardius. And coming up at about 12:30 every Tuesday on Hockey Central, it is Eric Dehatchuk from The Athletic. We'll get his look at round one of the playoffs in both the West and the East. It is a game day. Let's find out what Lou is up to just a couple of hours out from Flames warm-up. It's time for our segment with Peter Labardius.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
It means nothing right now. Like, it doesn't matter at the end of the season, at the end of all this, if you look at yourself and are happy with the way it went, if you lose in the first round, second round, the final, like, it's still a failure.
Lou? It's that old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And right now, the Calgary Flames, I think it's probably just stick to the blueprint set against the Jets in the qualifying round.
Well, I think it is, but understanding that with every different opponent and as you potentially move on, generally things get more and more difficult. But with this hockey team and what I talk about a lot on this program is this team had to do different. And I truly believe anyone who does different is because they can think it different and their mindset is different. So the reason we started there today, my friend, is that's exactly the mindset you want to have. Yes, should the Calgary Flames have felt good about what they did against the Winnipeg Jets? Well, frankly, why wouldn't they? They won every battle there is to win in a hockey series. They dominated physically. They won the special teams battle. Their goaltender was fantastic. They had a terrific collective effort from them. That is the blueprint. The difference is, can you do it again? You know, Marty Jelena, after game number one, has kind of given us, I think, the great line of the 2020 playoffs, and that's rinse and repeat. And the teams that make long runs in the Stanley Cup playoffs do what they do best collectively as a team, and they do a lot of rinsing and repeating. But this is what we'll continue to get into, I believe is an even more difficult challenge than the one they faced in the Winnipeg Jets, and especially in the one they faced after game one, or even 5.5 minutes into game one, because of Dallas's experience, still high-end players, and game breakers. But for the Calgary Flames, guys, first and foremost, Jeff Ward has talked about a couple of things a lot. He's talked about mindset. He's talked about doing different, and he's talked about their attention to detail defensively. And I think this group's starting to buy in. And where it really needs to be delivered is with their captain. And here was Mark Giordano yesterday on managing going from one round to another and what's really important about it.
Playing well defensively, playing physical is going to lead to offense for us and therefore success. So I think we've all bought in, but, you know, I don't really get any sense that any of the guys on our team are satisfied right now. It's, you know, we're looking at this. There's 16 teams left, and Dallas is a team that's in our way to get to the next round.
And, Lou, you look at the Stars forward groups. We know about Sagan. We know about Ben. We know about Radulov. Even Joe Pavelski is familiar to Flames fans. So that's the names, and we know what they do. We see them on highlight reels. What's the challenge defending the Dallas Stars? What do the Flames need to do well to keep those guys off the score sheet?
Okay, let's take it to a different place, guys, and let's dig in on this if we can. So would you guys both not agree that the Flames ended up being able to dictate to the Jets because they were winning matchups?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so let's break down this series, and let's start with the Backlund line. Let's start with today. You don't have last change, but when you match up against other people, you have to be able to defend elite-level people. So they're going to go, it looks like, Ope Hintz, who had a coming-out party, if you were watching, in last year's playoffs, in those first two rounds. It looks like he's going to be in the middle between Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. And get to know that name and that number, because the two-time former Finnish World Junior member and gold medalist in 2016 showed us last spring, elevated his game again this season to 19 goals. A lot of people don't talk about Ropey Hintz going into this series, but I will. So Rick Bowles today, at least to begin, and that's the important thing. But if you're Jeff Ward, well, when those guys are on the ice, I think he has shown that who's his first defensive pairing going to be. Because when you talk about matching up teams forwards, as much as it's about who they go up against forwards, the matchups you can always generally get is who you send out on defense. So, guys, where are we going to go there?
I would say probably a Geo Brody.
Yes. So you're going to start there.
Yeah.
But what's going to be really important in this series is you can start that way, but I truly believe that in order to win in the playoffs, you have to be able to have four defensemen in particular with your utilization. You need all six, and you don't just defend your defense. You defend in groups of five. But if I can't, as a coach, potentially today get the Backlund line out against that particular group, then it becomes about being able to defend with my defense pairings. Now, in the case of Giordano and Brody, I don't know how you guys felt. I thought TJ had an outstanding round one. He was really calm. He was composed. He made good plays. And in Mark, you're always going to get the great try and the great effort. But that is going to be an interesting matchup in particular today. But one of the underrated things about the Flames' victory over the Winnipeg Jets was the pairing of Noah Hanifin and Rasmus Anderson. Now, remember, going in, the Flames didn't have Travis Hamonic available. So they had to go about their business a little differently. And because of injury this season, without people like Hamonic and without Giordano, we saw a number of different pairings. But in that pairing, and these guys are going to be critical, whether it's defending that group or any other group, you're going to, Dallas poses some challenges because you're going to follow that group up with Pavelski, Janmark, and Radulov. So I truly, if you're the Flames, I need two pairings in particular that I feel comfortable and confident, especially when I don't have the last change, to be able to defend and move pucks and get that job done. And in the series against Winnipeg, those guys more than held their own. They were a collective plus nine. And I think experience matters a lot. They're both 23 years old. Now, one player has way more regular season experience. Noah Hanifin is coming up on 400 career games at his tender age. But in Rasmus Anderson, when I think about playoff performers, this guy is the son of a player and coach in his father. He's as competitive as all get out. He can process the game, gents, at an incredibly high level. But what do you think the biggest challenge is for a young defenseman to be able to do first and foremost, and especially at this time of year?
Play mistake free.
Defend elite level people and do it with as few errors as you possibly can. So in the media opportunities over Zoom, I know about this guy's ability to make plays, see the game. In fact, I thought he was spectacular, Rasmus, in game four of the series against the Jets. He was terrific. But I asked him about his personal growth and his confidence level going into this series about his ability with his partner to defend elite level forwards. And here was his answer.
I think it started last year, and especially the games I got to play with Gio last year. That's when you kind of realized that you got to be really good in both ends of the ice. And so it's something I worked on for the last 2 years. I mean, I feel like I've always been pretty good two-way defenseman, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit more credit right now because I play a little bit more decent stuff, and I play PK and all that kind of stuff. So, but honestly, it's just, I'm comfortable in playing in every situation, and so yeah, I feel good. And you gotta do it all in the playoffs. You can't just play one end of the ice.
So the Flames feel good about the top four. I think even when you break it down in a group of six, Forsberg has more than held his own business in this regard. He was a massive part of the penalty kill. He really was. And he blocked shots. And listen, would I be the first to tell you that I think he's going to make great plays? No. Is that his forte? No. But is he a big body? Yes. Is he good with his stick? Yes. Does he position well? Yes. And who's the gentleman that he plays with? What's his forte in Eric Gustafson?
All about offense.
Powerfully.
Power plays, he was a massive add to the power play. But even in 5-on-5, he's the guy that makes plays. He's gonna be the guy of those two that can feed transition. So we've talked about Dallas and their top two groups, and then they come back with Jason Dickinson, former Guelph Storm, again, great speed down the middle, with the agitating wonder in Corey Perry. Who does his skill set match what he used to? No. Does he love playing in competitive situations? Yes. Do I kind of liken him a little bit right now, but different? Like, there's a lot of comparison, guys, to Corey Perry and Matthew Tkachuk, and I understand that. But do you know who I kind of compare him to when I think about this series? Isn't he in some ways the same type of role as Milan Lucic?
Yeah, I can totally see that. Veteran kind of there to be a bit annoying, but also see if you can come up with some big plays. I can see that, yeah, for sure.
Agitating, experienced, He's won it all. And along with Pavelski, let's not kid anybody, when Jim Nill continued to build his hockey team after that devastating double overtime loss in game number 7, two key adds were Corey Perry and Joe Pavelski. So that can't be underestimated. But here's one player to keep an eye on. I talked about him, another guy. Denis Gurianov. Fast. Former first-round pick. Strong. Powerful. 20-goal season. And he, to me, if you talk about people like Dubé and Mangiapane as potential X-factors, he's an X-factor for me in this series. So that's kind of, and then again, you can't underrate Dallas's other group too. You got great experience in Blake Como and Andrew Cogliano, who's older but can still skate. And Radek Fax is a pretty good player. And this year in 3 games against the Flames, one night he was their best player. I thought he was as good as any player in one Dallas victory that they had over the Flames, not named Joe Pavelski. So that's a pretty good group of forwards. Now, let's turn the tables. We all like the Flames groupings, correct? In round one.
Yep.
I think a real key, I think there's a couple of real keys, guys. And that is, I thought the Backlund line was terrific. And while people don't always refer to them as the top line, for me, that's the top line on the team right now in how they're utilized, in the important minutes, who they have to check, and they still produce and they still set the table. That's an incredibly important line for the group. And the other really important group is the Bennett line. Who helped this team get to a different physical level in this series? The last one, that group. Sam Bennett, 22 hits. Lucic, points in 4 straight games. Dubé, 7 shots and a key goal in the last game. You're always trying to set the next group up to be a better spot. So can they, again, provide that physical presence? And then another key, the Monahan line. Pretty happy with that group, weren't we, coming out of round number one? Produced on the power play, held their own end of the bargain. Well, that to me, guys, is going to be incredibly critical in this series. Probably going to see a variance of Rick bonus lines. So can you hold your own? And can you give an edge, whether it's on the power play or 5-on-5? And again, first and foremost for me, a guy I'm going to be watching like a hawk, a big hawk, is Johnny Gaudreau. Because Elias Lindholm, for me, he is the consummate player. Sean Monahan, I think, showed great growth in that series. He won faceoffs. He won 16 power play faceoffs. He had 6 points in the series. Johnny Gaudreau, can he be more dynamic to, again, help create advantage? But it always comes back to your ability to be able to defend. You can't be on the wrong side, whether you're going up against Ben and Sagan or whether you're going up against Pavelski and Radulov. Can't be on the wrong side.
No, and they're tough guys to be on the right side against. That is a very talented Stars team, as you went through with the forward group. Talking about the Flames forwards, what about the blue line they're going to be going up against? There's a couple players on this blue line I really, really like. But overall, this matchup, and going to be liking them for a while, too. There are a couple young kids, a couple young studs on that team. How do you view that matchup, Flames forwards against the Stars defense?
Well, I look at Dallas very much this way, and I think of them as the big three, and that's Klingberg, Lindell, and Heiskanen, with maybe Alexiak, all 6'7" of them, rounding out the top four, and then you've got a great individual and personal story in Stephen Johns, who's you know, he's kind of Forbort like, except he's right-handed. You know, is he going to give you a lot of offense? No. Is he a great puck mover? No. But is he hard, physical, hard to play against? Absolutely. But I think the real key guys for the Flames and their forwards, what did they do against the Jets? They made life miserable on the Jets' defense. And this group is more talented, I think, certainly as a whole, than the Jets' defense by a considerable margin. But they also asked a lot. Even on Sunday, in the final game of the round robin, Sundberg played 28 minutes, and the other two guys played 24. Those minutes, guys, have to become hard minutes. So there's two things with Dallas, and you do this as a group of five. Flames really need with their forwards to establish a forecheck. I'm not sure there's anything more important most nights in your success than to make it difficult with the forecheck starting in the other team's zone. You need to make those guys work, because when you talk about one of the great young defensemen in the game in Haskinen, who had 4 points in the round robin, and Klingberg in particular, and I like Lindell. Lindell's just more of a, he gives you big minutes, and when he's right, good minutes. You go back to game 7 of last year's playoffs against St. Louis, that double overtime game, 37-45 for Esa Lindell in that double overtime game. He was an excellent player. So in Klingberg and Haskinen, you have two guys that not only do you need to punish and be smart against, but it's also how you punish. Because, okay, it's one thing, you got to finish your checks, but you know what you can't do against especially Klingberg and Haskinen? You can't finish a check and then leave yourself on the wrong side positionally. Because you know what they'll do? Now they're going to get up on the rush. And if you allow those guys to get up on the rush and create odd man situations, you're going to be in trouble. So you got to finish them. You got to establish your forecheck, but you cannot let those guys start to feed some of those high-end people, or you're going to have a big, big problem.
And the last part of this matchup is between the pipes. You have a Vezina Trophy nominee from last season in Ben Bishop, who had a bit of an injury concern, which is kind of the subplot to his entire career. Does sound like he's going to be ready to go for game one. He'll be going up against a Cam Talbot, who is on a roll right now out of that Jets series. How do you like the matchup between the pipes?
Well, if Cam continues to play, I like the matchup against anybody he's going to face. You can't really play the position much better. The numbers back up 9:45. He made all the key saves, the key times, which I think is absolutely the most crucial part of goaltending to begin with, and even more so when every goal and every shift and every shot just goes way up the ledger in terms of its importance in the playoffs. And I do, guys. Over and above that, I just think he gave his group such great trust and calm and poised, and really was the best Cam Talbot, because that's who he is. He's a very cerebral, thoughtful, you know, poised, good teammate person. And he did his job incredibly well. He's going to have to probably be even better, I think, against this group. But the interesting thing about Bishop, and Peter, it's great to mention, yes, he has had a history of, you know, going down and sometimes going down in the playoffs, and he's obviously, you know, he's nicked. I mean, let's not kid anybody. If you're a round robin team, are you taking a chance with anybody before today?
No, not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. But here's the thing today to keep in mind as you watch the game or listen to the game with Ben Bishop. He is an elite puck-moving goalie. So what do elite puck-moving goalies make it more difficult for your team to establish? A forecheck. Because if you don't put pucks in the right places to give yourself a chance to retrieve them or put pressure on the defense, that guy, you talk about Klingberg and Haskinen feeding transition, that guy is fabulous at sorting out breakouts and starting transition. He's very much, when he's at the top of his game, like having a third guy to quarterback your transition and your breakout game. So not only can he make the saves and gives you a giant target to have to beat, when I think about Ben Bishop, I think about how difficult he can make it for your team because of his ability to help your breakouts and make life way easier on your defense. And doesn't, guys, that maybe even become more important if you're going to play three guys of the six a ton?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an extra, that excellent point. Like, it really helps save your guys, especially you look at some of the predictions. No one's thinking this is going to be a quick series. This is going to be a long grind. So having that there also helps that as well.
It sure does. And that's, I think, what both teams feel like it's going to be. I think when you match it all up, I see some great positives on both sides of the ledger. And I can't wait. There's just no way to quantify properly outside of one thing. It just eats my lunch that I'm not in the rink. With every passing day, like, I spent my weekend, because my son lives in Edmonton, it's not that fun to be about 20 minutes from an arena and not being in. But that's COVID. That's the situation. And I'm way more focused and excited on having an opportunity to do this and call another game. And in a perfect world, we'll still be talking hockey into late September, early October.
Yeah, and this is a fun one to get to talk about for the next 4 to 7 games, and we answer at least some of the questions with game one in 3 hours' time. Lou, always fun chatting, sir. We'll do this again tomorrow.
Okay, have a great one, guys.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Yeah, we are 2 hours away.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, buddy. I'm just saying, we're just 2 hours away from warm-up, 3 hours away from puck drop with the Flames and the Dallas Stars. As Lou mentioned there, Will, you can go point-counterpoint on basically every matchup. This is going to be a fun series.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I certainly think there's more of an even matchup in terms of how you look at it on paper in almost every category than even what there was in the qualifying round. I think a lot of people gave the Flames the edge at the forward group and on defense, and especially after the injuries to Scheifele and Laine. And then, of course, in goal, it was so heavily weighted towards Hellebuyck, but as the series played out, it was Cam Talbot who outplayed the Vezina Trophy winner, or the likely Vezina Trophy winner, at the end of the season. So this one, yeah, I mean, this is a matchup. You know, it's funny, I was saying the other day to somebody who was over here, and I was just saying how the Flames and Stars, historically anyways, it just has that feel where the Flames don't do well in Dallas. If they ever play in Texas, they just always seem to struggle. And this time it's all a neutral footing. So I think it plays well to the Flames' advantage. And I do think that, you know, Dallas is saying all the right things and give them credit for doing so. But their inability to find offense is something I have great confidence in the Flames' ability to kind of counter that a little bit, because Calgary found the offense against Winnipeg. I think they did a lot of the right things, and I think that gave them confidence to maybe continue to build on that. And for Dallas, as I said, you can say all the right things, Pete, but it's awfully hard to just kind of flick that switch and all of a sudden find 4 or 5 goals a game as opposed to the 2-3 you've been averaging.
Yeah, and that them being one of the lowest scoring teams in the league will never not surprise me. When you look up and down this line, it's, oh yeah, no, that's a team that's rocking like 4 or 5 goals a game. And oh, they're third last in the league in goal scoring. Awesome. Great. But no, we all saw firsthand for 5 games what it's like to watch a team that just said they can flip the switch. That happened pretty clearly a year ago here. And that's why they were out in 5. I wonder how much of an effect that will have on this series.
We will find out, as Pete mentioned, just under now, 2 hours away from Flames warm-up, just under 3 hours away from puck drop in Edmonton. It's the Flames and the Stars, game one of this best-of-7 series, live on Sportsnet and CBC, and of course right here on Sportsnet 960. Our game day sponsor today is South Point Toyota. Just a reminder, it is August, which means all month long, including a little bit into September, giving that extra deadline. It's the Big Brothers Big Sisters All-Star for Kids campaign. and you could be an everyday all-star. Donate today and support life-changing mentoring programs for kids facing adversity. All month long, every donation you make is matched dollar for dollar, doubling your gift and your impact. Donate now and get all the information at allstarsforkids.ca. He's Peter Klein. I'm Will Nault. Flames game day continues on Hockey Central next as we check in with the Athletics' Eric DeHatchek right here, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back inside the program. Yes, it is a Flames game day for South Point Toyota. Game one of the best of seven opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Even though last week felt like it was the playoffs, now it officially is here. It begins with four games on the schedule today. The Flames are game two of those four today in the NHL. Of course, it all begins at the top of the hour with Columbus and Tampa. We're all over the Stars and the Flames here, though, on Sportsnet 960. Welcome you back to Hockey Central at noon. My name is Will Nault. He is Peter Klein, and we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to welcome in Eric DeHatchek from The Athletic. Eric, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm like you. I'm kind of interested in seeing what this second first round is going to be like. I mean, I remember we talked about this a while back about how the best part of the playoffs is always the first round, and this year we get two of them, and the last one did not disappoint. I mean, the drama and the ups and downs, and it was crazy. And what I like about sport, and I think what keeps people tuning in, is the unpredictability of it, and we got that, and so let's see if it continues. I mean, there's a part of me that wonders if, you know, some of these teams like the Chicago's and the Montreal's, you know, that was the best that they could do. And their season will now be a success, even if they lose these first rounds. Are we going to see sort of a return to what we might consider a normal result, or are these crazy upsets going to continue? I don't know the answer, because I didn't know the answer last round either. And so this is just, it's going to be fun.
Yes, it is. And I guess let's dive right in, Eric, and get some of the thoughts that you had. First off, with Columbus, they get through Toronto in five games. That fifth game was played on Sunday and really kind of lacked that dramatic ending, because Columbus shut out the Maple Leafs in that game five. And they're here to face the team that they shocked the hockey world against last year in round one in four straight games. It's Tampa and the Blue Jackets. If you're the Lightning, did you fear this matchup, or is this one that you're maybe excited about because you want to redeem yourself for last season?
Well, probably a little of both. I think that, Tampa found no answer to Columbus in last year's playoffs, and Columbus is making no secret of the fact that they're going to, you know, to plow ahead with the same exact game plan that they used against the Leafs. And then there's a lot of similarities between the way Toronto is constructed and the way that that Tampa is constructed. I would say, you know, overall, like if Victor Hedman, if someone could assure me that Victor Hedman was 100% healthy and able to play the kind of big minutes that Victor Hedman could play, and that he would then sort of counter affect the importance of Seth Jones on Columbus, I would be way more confident in Tampa. But you know, like whether he's in or out, whether he plays or not, I mean, it was like last year, he missed a game with suspension. He played the other three, but he really wasn't, right? He was not healthy. And so, you know, there's a difference between being in the lineup and being 100% healthy and able to impact the outcome of a game the way Hedman can when he's healthy. And so that would be the most concerning thing for me from a Tampa perspective. As much as you hate to have Steven Stamkos out of the lineup, there's enough depth scoring on that team that I think they can score enough, but I'm not sure that they can replace. Well, they can't. The healthy Hedman drives that team. I think he's their most important player, and if he's not playing at the level that he should play at, if he's healthy, then I give Columbus a chance, because that's what happened last year. I think the absence of Hedman at full capacity was really what helped Columbus, I should say, gain confidence. And if he shows in the next little while that he's, you know, either not playing or playing at a 75% of capacity, then that will create great confidence for Columbus, and I think it will create some worry internally in Tampa.
So just a side note on that, what did you make of the last couple of days? Tortorella has come out and supported Sheldon Keefe and really quite negative against those who, you know, kind of criticized him for some of the decisions made. I thought, you know, we've seen a lot of Tortorella interviews in our time, Eric. I think it's nice to see the human side because I've been fortunate enough to be in some scrums that involved Torts and after some tough losses. And yes, you know, he can be quite fiery, but I know that some of the work he's done with his son and some of the military stuff that he does in the U.S. I mean, this is a guy that I just think it's cool to see the human side of Tortorella, not just the blow-up clips you see on highlight reels.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I've known John for a while and really like him as a coach. And whenever I do one of those sort of deep dives on the art of coaching, he's one of the people that I'll reach out to because he is so good talking about it. I mean, the things that engage him, you know, he can be a fantastic interview. You know, I think he doesn't like, you know, the day-to-day lineup questions, the what did you do here, why did you do that, that kind of a thing. Because I don't think that, you know, he feels it's part of his job to explain what he's doing. Part of what he's trying to do is create game plans to keep the opposition off balance. And so, you know, like his, you know, privately, what he would tell you is, why should I tell them what I'm doing? You know, like part of coaching is the element of surprise. So, and you know, again, there is a relationship. You know, Keith was a player in the Tampa organization, didn't play a lot when John coached there. And so, you know, there's a history that goes back two decades. And, you know, specifically to the point about Sheldon Keefe's coaching, I mean, you know, like I it bothers me sometimes, you know, when you blame the coach for a game plan that isn't that the team is just unable to execute. I mean, in the playoffs, one team wins, one team loses. And, and you know, that Toronto team had oodles of chances. They got tons of guys that can score. What was it that he didn't do? Did he not devise the right game plan? Did he not press the right motivational buttons to get more out of Mitch Marner than you might have expected? I mean, you know, Marner had I think the coaching change really energized players like Matthews and Marner in the regular season, and it just wasn't there. I mean, you know, what Marner went through this, you know, playoff was similar to what Johnny Gaudreau went through last one. You could tell there was frustration setting in when it wasn't kind of going his way. So, you know, it bothers me when that eventually goes back to the coach because, you know, like if the players on the ice aren't executing, you know, sometimes they just got to be better, and there's not much that you can do as a coach. So no, I thought, you know, it was within John's character to come to his defense like that, and he is a passionate guy, and you know, I mean, for all the things that are wrong in the Toronto organization, you know, to put it down to coaching at this stage of the game is just wrong, I think.
Let's shift gears a little bit, but stay in the East. Boston, Carolina. This matchup fascinates me because Carolina is a team that came in and took the Rangers' lunch and didn't let them play with the puck at all in that best of five and ran their show for three games. They went to the Eastern Conference Final last year and lost to Boston. And this is a Boston Bruins team who came in as the clear-cut number one team in the NHL and lost every round-robin game, ended up as the number four seed in the Eastern Conference. He talks so much about flipping that switch, Eric. And I know those round robin teams were not going to risk anything in those games, but this is a matchup where if I'm a Bruins fan, I might be a little bit worried about this one.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, again, every one of these matchups is so fascinating, you know, on some level. And this one in particular, you know, because I do think the Carolina is a team that is on the upswing. Now, again, you know, we're talking about elite defensemen, you know, coming back from injury. And in Carolina's case, it's Dougie Hamilton. So you have the, you know, the added drama of, you know, Dougie Hamilton, who began his career in Boston, you know, played those years in Calgary and now is playing for Carolina. A lot of people in Boston didn't like Dougie Hamilton. I think it really benefits him to be playing in coming back and then playing in a neutral site rather than starting on the road in Boston, where I think, you know, the boo birds would be out in full force. So this is one time where the isolation of the hub, I think, is going to really enhance a player just from the not having to put up with that sort of secondary noise that Dougie Hamilton would have to put up with it if this was a regular playoff game in a regular venue. Hasn't played a lot of hockey since he was injured. So, you know, how long does it take to get up to speed? And that is a very challenging Boston team. And by the sounds of it, just, you know, the comments that Rod Brindamore made earlier today, you know, he's going to start Hamilton with Slavin, and that probably means that they're going to get the matchup against the Bergeron line. So that is a tough, tough matchup for any defenseman, and especially for a defenseman who's coming off an injury. So it'll be interesting to see at what level he plays at, because if he plays at a high level, you know, that just greatly enhances that Carolina team, which has one of the deepest defenses in the National Hockey League. I mean, it sounds as if, you know, Jake Gardner will probably have to come out of the lineup because they love the way everybody else is playing there. And they don't even have Brett Pesce, who normally would be on that shutdown pair. So, you know, Carolina has a tremendous amount of depth. You know, they got an awful lot in that first round out of Aho and Svechnikov, and they did not get very much out of Niederreiter. And you know, Vincent Trocheck, while I think was very, very good defensively and won a lot of key faceoffs, also wasn't scoring regularly. So I don't think that Carolina can win this series unless they get a little bit more depth scoring. It's all fine and good. I mean, you know, it's a matchup of two teams with incredibly strong top lines. And so if they cancel each other out, then it's whichever team is going to get the secondary scoring that is going to take it. And I think Carolina is capable of doing that, but in the first round, the guys that should be scoring for them didn't.
He is Eric Tkachuk of The Athletic, our guest every Tuesday and Thursday in Hockey Central at noon. I'm Will Nault. He is Peter Klein.
Eric, the main focus here, of course, is Calgary against Dallas, round number one starting in a couple hours here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. There's a lot of ways where Dallas and Calgary looking at each other might resemble looking in a mirror. What stands out to you about this series?
Well, you know, let's start with the goaltending matchup. I mean, you know, Ben Bishop is the sort of goaltender that, when he is on top of his game, can be outstanding, you know, but he is someone that has an injury history. And I think when he is not feeling physically right, you know, the level of his play really drops off. And then he's not a guy that's afraid to pull himself from a game if he's not feeling right, because he knows that. And they have a quality backup in Anton Khudobin. But you know, on paper, I think most people would give Dallas the edge. But I've long believed, and you've heard me, you know, cite this theory probably over and over again, that once you get to a certain level of NHL goaltending, you know, I don't like talking about good and bad goaltenders. I like talking about hot and cold goaltenders. And so, you know, if you turn on the Calgary side in Cam Talbot, they have a guy that's really hot, you know. So, yeah, maybe on paper, you know, if you could pick one of the two, you might pick Ben Bishop because of his pedigree. But certainly, in, you know, what we've seen in the last little while, you know, Cam Talbot is, you know, playing as well as anyone in the National Hockey League. So if the goaltending matchup ends up being a draw, or, you know, as in the case of the Winnipeg series where Calgary actually won the goaltending matchup, I thought, then I think it shapes up pretty well for the Flames. You know, the difference is that I watch Dallas play and I look at Jamie Benn and I look at Tyler Seguin. And so you see the names and the faces and the numbers on the back of the jersey and you think elite players. And then you see them play and you know, I think Seguin is still pretty close to being an elite player. Ben, there seems to have been some fall off in his game. And while Pavelski scored some big goals for them in that round robin, you know, he hasn't had that great a first season in Dallas after coming over as a free agent. I think he is a guy that can raise the level of his game and is a proven playoff performer. But, you know, if you could turn the clock back on those three guys, on, you know, a little bit on Radulov too, and a lot on Corey Perry, I mean, it would be an outstanding team. But all of those guys are not what they once were. And so while they have some interesting forwards coming up, like Gurianov has made some strides this year, you know, and Rupe Hintz before he got hurt looked like a very dynamic player. So it's a very interesting team, because, you know, you have some players in ascendancy, you have some players in decline, and, you know, like, where are they today? And I guess we'll find out, because the point that you guys made earlier about reading too much into the round robin, you just can't, you know, like, all those games seem to be, you know, if you can generalize, those games seem to be played in three quarter time while the elimination games were just, you know, go. I like this as a matchup for Calgary. I mean, if you pick the possible options for Calgary as a first round opponent, you look at Vegas, Colorado last year, And then St. Louis, you know, again, not very good in the round robin, but there, that's a traditionally a very tough matchup for the Flames. You know, if you could pick, you'd pick Dallas. You know, no, nobody in the organization is going to say that, but if you could pick, you'd pick Dallas. And I think that that it's a matchup that they could win. I think it's a lot of people are saying it's going to be close. A lot of people think that it could go down to the wire. I don't disagree with that, but I think the Stars are beatable for the Flames.
Eric, awesome as always, sir. We'll chat again in a couple days when we have a little bit more information after game one between the Flames and the Stars.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That is Eric DeHatchuk joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. We break and put a bow on Hockey Central at noon next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Lots more time this afternoon to break down the Stars and the Flames. Game one goes at 3:30. Our game day sponsor is South Point Toyota. That'll do it for Hockey Central. I'm Will Nault. He is Peter Klein. Klein, just quickly, most exciting thing about today's hockey slate. Go.
I'm going to say this Flames-Stars game. I know it sounds like a cop-out because it's the one on our air, but I think it's the closest series, and I'm looking forward to game one.
Yeah, it should be fun. The West doubleheader, I think tonight should be a lot of fun. I just like watching Vegas play. They're entertaining, and Carolina Boston will not suck either. But it all begins in a couple of minutes. Columbus and Tampa live from Toronto. The first game of four today across the NHL. A new show with some new voices. Not really. Coming up next, right here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames fans qualifying round.